Welcome, Gothamites, to episode 90 of The Knights, the weekly podcast where Adam,
hello,
and myself break down every single episode and movie from the legendary Batman the Animated Series. This week it's season 3, episode 11, The Ultimate Thrill. And this is one that really surprised me, not just in its content, but in the way it really does deal with some very, very grown-up issues. But hey, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Adam, how are you? And what's your immediate thoughts on this very, very different episode of Batman the Animated Series?
Doing quite well. Reeling from the introduction of a new character to me, at least. I hadn't heard of Rosie Rocket before this episode, and she was quite a surprise. And she challenged Batman in many, many different ways. She challenged many fan favorite characters in a lot of different ways, I'd say. She made us really think and really reassess what these characters value and what matters to them in this wider world of Gotham crime and crime fighting.
Absolutely. And yes, readers, you heard right. This is the debut appearance on television, at least, of Roxy Rocket. She actually did appear in the Batman Adventures comics based on the animated series first. And she has actually made a few appearances in the main DCU as well. So she's actually like an Anzi Harley who first appeared in the animated series, then in the animated series comics, then in the comics. This one appeared in the animated series comics, then the animated series, and then the comics. And I think another brilliant creation by Paul Dini and Bruce Timm, don't you?
Oh, definitely. There's something very out of place and timeless about her, but that sort of adds to the out of place and timeless sort of nature of like this version of Batman the Animated Series. It's is it in the 90s? Is it in the 40s? Why is everyone rectangular? Who knows? It's a strange choice that we can't quite unpack, but that just sort of adds to the timelessness of it and the charm of it. So yeah, like the brass, the leathers, she feels like a very sinister Amelia Earhart.
Oh, I like that. I was thinking more like a slightly naughty Indiana Jones stroke the Rocketeer, especially with her riding her rocket the way she does, like a super jet-powered steed. It's Bazooka Jane and her jet-propelled horse, isn't it?
Exactly, definitely, yeah. But that's that's kind of the joy of many different kinds of characters like that. You can read them in lots of different ways, and they're all still correct.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a character, though, that I'm actually, now I've seen this episode, don't think they're doing enough with, because this is a character with so many stories they can tell. I mean, imagine a fearless woman like her, and she is fearless. Right at the end, I thought, this is all going to be an act, she's going to crumble, but that facade does not even waver. I mean, at the end, we'll talk about it when we get to it, she's like scary fearless. Imagine someone like this with a Green Lantern ring. Exactly. I mean, talking about fearless, she makes Daredevil and Batman look squeamish. She is unreal. I mean, to the point of detriment to her life, I think.
Oh, no, that's the whole point. She wants to pursue the next great stunt. She wants to perform the next death-defying act. So, yeah, she'll push the boundaries wherever she can because she can. And that's a very dangerous sort of person to put yourself up against.
Absolutely. So let's talk about her. Roxanne Sutton, aka Roxy Rocket, a stuntwoman par excellence, so good that she doesn't just stumble for the female cast, but for the dudes and heavyweights and muscle-bound men as well. So I think she must wear padded suits and platform shoes or whatever else. But her level of skill, her level of daring, her level of acrobat, if she turned to the side of good, I don't think she could, because of her addiction to the thrill. She would make an incredible asset to just about any team on earth, I think.
I think so too. I think it would be very interesting to see. I think she would try it for a little while, but then eventually find the good side of things a little bit too boring. Or would she actually really enjoy it, because it's a lot more risky to be a good guy because you put your life on the line so many times. So either way works quite well.
That's actually the thoughts I had, because I think that being a hero is actually more difficult, more challenging, and something you can't be bored of, because you literally... Oh, but does she invite death at times? I don't know. Well, we will talk about it as it progresses, because everything she does, every stunt she pulls, every villain she faces. I mean, to go up against Penguin, let's start there. The fact that she's doing heists and stealing from the rich and the famous and whoever else, because the thrill of the movie industry has been taken away from her because no one will insure her. They fired her. They will not let her work in Hollywood anymore. So she's gone for the next thrill. Treading on thin ice from day one, going against someone like Penguin, right?
She saw him as a means to an end, I think. He was the the one who sponsored all of her heists and sort of fenced a lot of her stolen wares. So he was a natural fit for that. But like when she started to get bored of him, even she really just like really tried her utmost to sort of like antagonize him. But it might be arrogance, or it might be just like found confidence in her acrobat skills and her ability to cheat death. She didn't see him as a threat, which might have been a mistake if the story had gone on a little longer or played out a little differently, but fortunately it didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, actually, because you're right. That story could have played out very differently if extended over two episodes or with a different ending to what it had. And that's kudos again to a writer who has come from strength to strength. She made her debut in the series, Hilary J. Bader, but she's absolutely killing it. And I've already said her comic book work is exemplary as well. And I've got to talk about the direction by Dan Reber, one of the mainstays. This episode felt like a 40s serial with the cliffhanger endings and the stunts she pulls and the fact she rides on a rocket. All of that added to the whole timeless feel of this whole show.
Yeah, the fact that it was a femme fatale riding around on the rocket is another way to look at her as like a sinister Rosie Riveter. Because that whole 1940s women in the workforce war effort, them actually building the rockets together, just like imagine one dame takes the rocket into her own hands, stuff like that. So yeah, there's another sort of timeless, unclear nature of it, but that's why I love this version of Batman the Animated Series so much. It's inherently, naturally timeless. And we get stories like this where the character is brand new, but feels older. It's very hard to make that come across and seem real, because after a while it might either be parodying the time frame and the time period it's trying to come from, or it just doesn't land. But somehow this lands, which is funny because she does a lot of flying.
Very good. I think that's got to go down to Bader's script as well, though, hasn't it? Because sometimes exposition, being there for the sake of exposition, is one of the most annoying traits in writing, and it's not one I particularly fond of unless it's done well. But here, the whole thing of you meet her first, you see what she's like, and then you get the slight recap from Bruce and Babs about Roxanne Sutton, the stunt woman, and being kicked out of Hollywood, and then you think, oh, okay, now I get it. So the exposition works because it's done after we meet the character, rather than this is this person, this is that person, this is that person, and then you meet them, which doesn't work.
I'd say it's also good because it's very concise. It's very like you meet this character like at first thing in the episode and she pulls this heist on the Zeppelin with like perfect skill and just jumps out, and it doesn't look like she has a parachute, but she's fine. She just gets away anyway. Then we get the context. So, and then we get the context in a way that is just like exactly as much as we need so that the rest of the episode can be devoted to her battle of wits against Batman. So it's perfectly paced and perfectly handled. Perfectly paced and perfectly handled, because like we've talked so much about how concise all of these episodes are. Like they tell a lot of story in 20-ish minutes of kids' TV.
And well, so well. I mean, I've always thought that characters like Selina and Tali were perfect foils for Bruce, but this lady is up there because she is, there's no denying it, she is more fearless than Bruce. But that, again, isn't a strength, because I do believe that Batman's risks are always calculated. He knows when to take a risk. He knows how far he can go. His equipment, his means, his money, his years, decades of training are his parachute, are his landing cushion. Whereas she throws caution to the wind to a terrifying extent.
Yeah, definitely. She has no regard for herself or what comes out of it. She just wants to have the most memorable moments. So she'd be okay with going out in a blaze of glory because she went out in a blaze of glory. But Batman would never make that kind of risk because it's reckless to try and risk your own life then, because who are you saving? Who are you helping in the city of Gotham by doing that?
There you go. Yeah. So maybe she'd make the perfect Klingon. Perhaps today is a good day to die. So, yeah, well said. I like that. That works for me. So let's talk about something else then. Still with the writing part of the story. Again, Hilary J. Bader is not just someone who does good characterization, good plot. She's also fantastic for the one-liners. When she finishes with Batman that first time, thanks for a great first day, I'll call you. And when Batman arrives after almost wrecking the Batwing, Alfred says to him, this is coming out of your allowance. Brilliant.
So perfect brilliant. Characterization. Yeah, we get that extra layer of, like, what is their dynamic? Why? Like, because she recognizes the kindred spirit in Batman, of the thrill seeker and the one that takes those big risks, but he has a reason for taking his biggest risks. Yes. I think she takes her biggest risks just because. But that kindred spirit is still there, so that's why so flirtatious about it. And like Alfred pretending to, well, not pretending, having the whole overlooking father figure style of attitude, that's been consistent in Batman for as long as the characters have been around. So yeah, that just felt natural as well. So happy to see the line like that. It's just so charming, just so fun.
It's vintage Alfred. And like you said, even though this is the first time we're actually meeting her, vintage Roxy, because she sees Batman as possibly her only equal on Earth, someone who is out there for the thrill of it. And I can't deny that. As a Batman fan, he's not doing this for the love of it. Mm. It's not just that. He's not just doing it because he's the only one who can. At some level, he must be enjoying it, whether it's the thrill of the takedown of the criminal, whether it's the thrill of the chase, whether it's something, he must get something out of it, because he couldn't do it for the years, decades that he does if there wasn't some love in his craft. And that's another aspect of the character that we don't see anywhere else except the comics and this show.
Even then, I think it would be a very weird choice for Batman to say, I do this because I choose. Like, he said multiple times, I do this because I choose it. That's fine. Him saying that a part of him enjoys this, that would be a very weird thing to hear, in my opinion. I think it would be misguided for him to say, I recognize that my city is full of crime and disorder, but my stopping it is something that I enjoy doing. Something I choose to do, something that I should do. Yeah, that makes sense. But I enjoy doing it. It's a very weird choice of words. But there has to be something like that in there somewhere. So I think that's why this character, Roxy Rocket, is so on the nose and perfect. Because she shows a sort of side of someone who takes those kinds of risks but does enjoy it. And shows that, holds that mirror up to Batman to make him think about it. Because sure, he has to think that way, but he'd never say that he thinks that way.
Yeah. But even in recent years, I mean, it has changed. He's gone from being the grim, gritty loner, who was never a loner. His family is truly the biggest extended family of crime fighters in all of comics. But you do see in the comics these days where he teams up with Superman, where he teams up with the Flash, where he teams up with any of the Robins. He does enjoy himself more. He sees the reason and everything he's fighting for. And the fact that in recent years, writers like Tom Taylor have had him where he's had to comfort a child who's lost a parent or has seen a horrific crime on the street, that one of the pouches in his utility belt is dedicated to lollipops that he can give to a kid to calm them down. And that's an actual thing that happens in the comics. So I do believe that he does love certain aspects of what he does, and that's why he does it. It's not just for the thrill like Roxy. So in many ways, while they're very, very similar, just like with Selina, just like with Talia, there's that barrier there that keeps them apart. Because, again, I see this woman being an amazing romantic interest for Batman, but, oh, it's such a fine line.
It really is. It's because, like, those romantic interests, they always have something that really draws them back to Batman. It's the appreciation for how they do things. Like, Catwoman and Talia both respect his skill. Roxy Rocket respects his lack of fear. But the things that they actually do, the things that they keep them out and adventuring, as long as there's a difference in morals there or a difference in motivation, that's what will keep them apart.
Exactly.
And, in the case of like Batman and Selina, that's actually just deeply tragic.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
But it's necessary because after a while, their morals will start to clash and they can't work like that.
They want to be together. They deserve to be together, but they can't ultimately be together. And that's, heartbreaking and tragic.
Really is.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about, and we've mentioned this, and I think it was the last episode, that there's definitely character progression going on in the series with Batman himself. And I've done a little bit of research. I recently reread, I think I mentioned it a few episodes back, I recently reread Batman Animated by Chip Kidd and Paul Dini. And I was right in thinking that almost as soon as season three started airing, Warner had already approached them and said, listen, let's do something different. This is going to be the final season. Let's do a new Batman. Let's do a future Batman. So we saw the armor against Firefly. And in this episode, because he wrecks the Batplane, it's not maneuverable enough for the canyons of Gotham City, which is why she rides a rocket. We see the debut of the Bat jetpack. And again, definite now precursor of the two armors, uniforms, joining up to become what will be the Batman Beyond suit. Did you feel that as well when we saw the jetpack?
Yes, that was the exact comment I made on the smaller jetpack style movement and maneuverability really influencing the Batman Beyond style suit. And then the Batmobile being like obviously a flying car of the day for Batman of the future, it's more like a flying Batcave. So it's something there for utility and for intimidation, definitely. But not something that helps him get around, like unlike the Batplane that he needs in this present day version of Batman. So yeah, there's definitely an element of that, and it just makes sense for him to want to progress that way, moving with the times.
Yeah, and the world building here, the fact that they are clearly one cohesive set universe, and apparently, again, I'd need to watch them all again. This is also true with the whole Justice League and Justice League Unlimited series, where if you watch those and Superman Animated and Batman together, it's clearly one set universe, and that just makes me want to get a lottery win and own all of this stuff on Blu-ray, not just Batman the Animated Series and Batman Beyond. I want all of it now because it's so brilliantly realized.
Yeah, the Justice, like this redesign of Batman's costume is exactly the same as that Batman from the Justice League Unlimited show. And it's still Kevin Conroy in it, and we still get glimmers of that architecture of Gotham, the Batcave. And I might be wrong here, but I think Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. appears as Alfred a couple of times in the show in places.
No, he does, you're right. Right, so, until the point he passed away, yeah.
Yeah, so it's very clearly one set of DC Animated Universe that's still somehow the most sincere on-screen vision of the DC Universe ever, really. We've got glimmers of it here and there in some of the other portrayals and some of the live-action stuff, but never exactly right. So seeing it just as this one enormous animated story is so incredibly ambitious, but so incredibly welcome.
Well said. Very, very well said. And I'm glad you brought up the flying Batmobile, because I've got to, again, tip my hat, not just to the writing and the acting, but again, to the music and to the sound design for this show, because that Batmobile sounded like a Nef 5. It sounded like the meanest jet alive. It was beautiful. It literally leapt out of the screen. I really loved that.
That was always the intent, because like Batman's vehicles are obviously very functional.
Yeah.
But he still needs to have them be the imposing figures of fear that he is when you see that coursing down the road after you, or like dominating the skyline and then flying very cool but very impractically over the moon.
It looks nice though.
It always does. Yeah, super duper does. But yeah, that kind of use of form is always welcome. So have it be functional but still sound and look like a beast. Yeah, it's necessary. So I'm glad that they kept that kind of sound design in it. And in an animation like that, a sound team gets to have a lot of fun with that kind of design for a vehicle.
Absolutely. So now let's talk about the actors themselves. We already said great piece of character development for Batman and Kevin Conroy. And Kevin was virtually, I mean, he had about three or four lines of dialogue. Apart from the intro to Roxy Sutton's character at the beginning, he doesn't speak very much. He just acts. But that, again, is also vintage Batman. So let's talk about Charity James. Who plays Roxy. And again, you may not know this lady by looking at her. In fact, you probably wouldn't. But anyone who watches animation, anyone who plays video games has heard her voice. Check this out.
This will be good.
Animated series, Gargoyles, Spy Dogs, movies, Balto, Totally Spies, Max Steel, Space Jam, Anastasia. She was Dr. Elise Chapman throughout the entire Godzilla animated TV series. Video games. I mean, we're talking right back to the 80s up to the present here. Grand Theft Auto 5, Speed Racer, Neverwinter Nights 2, Battlestar Galactica, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, right up to the present day, the recent Gotham Knights video game. She has lent her voices. Voices, plural, because this girl, this lady is, wow, what a voice. I mean, Roxanne Sutton here, grown woman, clearly. But the range of her voice, I mean, let's talk about it. Paul Dini and Bruce Timm, the showrunners, and Alan Burnett said that they pushed the boundaries with this episode. Because let's be fair, right at the end where she's riding the rocket with Batman trying to drag her down and they're heading right to that cliff face. I thought that's when she'd break. I thought that's when she'd give up. I thought that's when she'd say, oh, go, no, let me off. Her squeals of joy at almost dying were, let's face it, bordering on orgasmic. She loved every second, right to the point where Batman cuffed her. And that is a, for adults, we see it. For kids, they all just go straight over their heads. Brave or dangerous in terms of storytelling?
It's somehow both. But also very true to form for the character to take that kind of risk. Yeah, it's a very weird choice, especially when you unpack it a little bit, but it makes perfect sense for the character to just get off on fear and mortal danger like that. So it was a very rare time when the actual storyteller took as big a creative and daring risk as the character known for taking risks. So I really respect them for it. It couldn't have been easy. And I know how conservative Warner Brothers can be sometimes. So them allowing that was a big risk on their part as well. So it, true to form, fit the character perfectly. So, yeah, I'm glad they did it that way.
Couldn't have been easy. This is, we say it so much, don't we? That this is why this entire show is elevated above everything else out there, because it works for the kids. They'll just see a crazy lady who loves thrills and danger, whereas the adult audience will think, well, she does take it to form. I mean, this is the ultimate adrenaline junkie. Ultimate adrenaline junkie. It's insane. Brilliant character, brilliant villain, incredible story. Again, I can't see anything really to complain about with this episode. Fantastic development of character for Batman as well. So let's talk about our main takeaways. What are yours from The Ultimate Thrill?
I think we talked a lot about them just sort of as a nature of the episode. I really like this character, and I think this was an amazing, perfect introduction for them. The overall aesthetic, just this whole 40s air hog dandy, was always really great. The thrill seeking was always done in a way that was sincere and consistent, and it was very satisfying to see someone new, a brand new character, square up to Penguin, who's been around since the beginning of Batman's existence, near enough. See a new character square up to a mainstay like the Penguin and still come out on top. That's how you introduce a character. So I think that was what I liked the best.
Yeah, same. This character has really, I don't know, struck a chord in me. I mean, thankfully right now, due to moving office and moving house, all my comics are within arm's reach now. And after seeing this episode, I literally went through all my long boxes, went through the DC Wiki, and I do own all her comic book appearances. Oh, wow. And I want to read them all now. And because I think this character is vastly underutilized, has so much potential. that I want to have a resurgence in comics. So if anyone from DC is listening, I'd love to see Tom Taylor's take on her. Ooh. She'd be such an incredible foil for Dick and Babs in Bloodhaven. That would be incredible. And I know Tom Taylor's a massive Batman the Animated Series fan, or the ultimate Batman the Animated Series fan, Sean Murphy.
Mm.
Bring this lady to White Knight. She's made a couple of cameo appearances, but let's bring her back. You're good at bringing back vintage characters and doing weird things with the Batman movie and animated universes. So let's hopefully see a Roxy Rocket resurgence. Oh, yes. Alliteration, yes. Out of nowhere, without even planning it.
How very of the time that we can expect this lady to come from. And you've heard it here first. If she rockets back onto the scene,
very good.
Then she only blasted off thanks to our rocket fuel.
There we go.
Love it.
Nice.
Very nice.
So that's it. Episode 90 of I Am the Knight.
Oh, wow.
Season 3, Episode 11, The Ultimate Thrill by Hilary J. Bader and directed by Dan Reber. I loved it. Adam loved it. But Adam, what else do you love? What else do you do? Where can we hear you? Where can we see you?
I have many things that I love, and I put all the things I love out in the fine wider universe for you to see. For Batman and DC Comics flavored things, look to my reviews on Dark Knight News. Catwoman's in a great spot right now, and I'm itching for some new title to sink my many eyes and teeth into. But so you can catch all of my reviews, past and present, there, Dark Knight News. But for my one true love, PC and tabletop gaming, look no further than our pride and joy, Fantastic Universes. I give my 2 cents on digital card games, board games, and anything else that tickles my fancy there. And the Fantastic Plays podcast, where a friend, special guest, and I talk about our favorite issues and ways to play across all of gaming, PC, console, tabletop, and everything in between. Follow me on Twitter at isittinkerer, as you can see up there, and see me streaming digital card games on twitch.tv/isittinkerer. I had my return stream with Marvel Snap go back pretty well, and it looks like the DC Dual Force will be starting to come into its own once they fix the final tests and put the final beta full access somewhere in this grand month of July. So you can find me playing Batman in a card game somewhere. Dreams do come true. But that's me. What about you, Father?
Not just Batman. The fact that the news came out yesterday that the Justice League Dark characters are all going to be making an appearance mm-hmm. on the games got me hugely excited. We're talking about that on this week's DC Comics News podcast. So hugely exciting news there, absolutely. But in terms of your comics reviews, you've got a brand new Batman Beyond series starting next month. And we've got the whole Night's Terrors event for 2 months. And Selena's heavily involved, which you'll see in your Google folder. We've got the books for the 18th of July now, so that looks really, really cool. As for me, just type Steve, J, Ray, or Fantastic Universes into your search engine of choice, and that'll take you to news, reviews, features, and interviews across DC Comics News, Dark Knight News, and our baby, our pride and joy, Fantastic Universes. Talk to me. Please talk to me. On Twitter at lstevo, el_stevo. This show, the DC Comics News podcast, and all other kinds of wonderful awesomeness can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and YouTube, and of course wherever else you find your podcasts and audio entertainment. But until you do, you have to remember a few things.
I am the Knight.
We are the Knight.
And this has been the I Am the Knight podcast. Thank you for listening, and until next time,
read
more
comics
and watch
more
Batman.